Hello everyone, welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. As advertised, this is my interview with photographer and videographer and creator of the Illawarra Hawks, the Foundation Club by Slam Magazine. It's Matthew Adekponya. You can find Matthew on Twitter, at Adekponya, so A-D-E-K-P-O-N-Y-A, and then also A-D-E-K-P-O-N-Y-A.com. And on Instagram, a lot of great pictures there of sports and nature and how Matt does his business. Definitely worth your time. This conversation, we predominantly talk about Matthew's time in the NBA G League and his playing career, both in this country and overseas. We talked about his progression from, video games to photography to videography, which is an interesting trail of things. We talked about storytelling in sports, obviously in particular basketball, but also just the narrative around physicality. And then we talked about working with the Illawarra Hawks and Slam Magazine on the Foundation Club. If you've been watching, I think we're up to episode 10, soon to be 11. Great series. The War Room episode where Matt Flynn's talking about who they're going to sign to replace the injured Aaron Brooks. We talk about how he makes that, how he shoots it, what he likes to do, how the project began. And then we also talk about his working with the Australian Boomers team in China and getting to film them and the relationship between photographer and talent or sports people. And of course, we talk about his working philosophy, being mobile, simplifying the process. It was done over the phone. Matt is in and out of airports and working here and there, so quality's not great, but I do say do persist. It's the only way we could have recorded it. Great guy, great chat, great portfolio. I hope you enjoy. So Matt, my first question for you is, you played in the G League, right?
Yeah, temporarily. I played long enough to get the website hit.
Yeah, well, I noticed on your profile, it says you're from, and I think this is the exact quote, it says unknown stroke Australia. You got to be pretty proud about that. That's an interesting way to be introduced.
Yeah, I think the way they do it, because a lot of the guys that have their college or where they last really played, but since I kind of just bounced around, I didn't go to a D1 school. I went to a little NAIA school. I didn't really play in the NBL. I just sat on the bench. And I filled out my hometown. It's Cairns and all that, but they just went with just Australia, I guess, and left the rest blank.
I like that, though. Parts unknown. That's a good little tidbit at parties, I guess. You're a dual citizen of Australia and Ghana, am I right?
Yes, that's correct.
Is your mother Australian or your father Australian? How does that work?
My mother's actually Dutch, and my dad's from Ghana. They just both met in Australia, so by blood, I'm not Australian, but I definitely identify as a dual citizen and as a proud Australian and a proud Ghanaian. I've used both passports for basketball. I was actually going to try to get my Dutch one when I was playing as well, but I would have to surrender my Australian one, and that definitely wasn't something that I wanted to do,
Because I was about to say, there's another dual citizen on the Hawks. Do you know who it is?
There's a few. A lot of them just don't have passports.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Well, the one I was referring to is AJ Ogilvy. I know he's Australian-Irish. Now, whether he's got a passport for Ireland or Australia, I don't know. But who are the others there?
Dan Greta is able to get a passport. So is Sunday Dutch, and I think Emmett Nahr might be as well. I'm not certain, but I definitely know Sunday and Dan Greta.
Where's Greta's citizenship other than Australia?
That is a great question.
Oh, you don't know?
No.
Wow, how interesting. Well, that could be an episode of the Foundation Club in the future. Take that.
For sure.
One thing I was going to ask you, Matt, is you're in pretty good shape. What do you kind of do to stay in shape? Basketball, but what else as well?
I guess I've been brought up in a place where you play a lot of sports. In Cairns, you're just outside. It doesn't matter if you're hiking, you're playing basketball, you're playing soccer, you're playing footy. You're just running around, riding bikes. And I guess growing into an adult and trying to stay in, I guess, playing shape just for, I don't know, mental health reasons, physical, just physical health as well. I like going surfing now a lot. I do that whenever I can. Swimming with my water housing a fair bit, and then just still lifting.
Lifting.
I got a little bit of an upper hand having a dad from West Africa. You kind of get born with a metabolism that is very favorable.
Yeah.
So I don't really do as much as other people would to stay in shape.
Is that right?
I just try and eat well, reduce carbs since I'm not running as much. Just try to eat really fresh produce, lean cuts of whatever I can find, plenty of greens.
And did basketball kind of, did you go into basketball, like you just loved it straight away, or did you kind of migrate from football or rugby coming from Cairns? How did you get into basketball?
I actually played soccer growing up. I was a goalkeeper, which is pretty funny being able to catch, but I loved it. All my friends played soccer growing up. I didn't really play basketball until 1 or 2 years later when I was maybe 6 or 7.
Right.
But I started soccer really young, and yeah, I love soccer even all the way through to grade 8 when I was 13. Yep.
So and like I that Akeem Olajuwon progression.
Kind of, obviously not as talented.
I mean, not as successful as Akeem Olajuwon, but yeah, that who was.
Yeah. But I loved it, and then I guess I don't know why I chose basketball. We had a bunch of really good soccer players at my school or on my club team, and we're just thrashing teams. I guess being a goalkeeper wasn't very fun, you know. I wasn't getting much football, even though that's a good thing as a goalkeeper. You want as many clean sheets as you can, but there was just more of a challenge in basketball, even at a young age, and it just kind of, lured me in a little bit. I wouldn't say it was more fun; it was just more challenging. So I did that, and then I wasn't very good at basketball, so that was kind of enjoyable as well. So I just stuck with it.
Sure. Tell me, with basketball, were you a sort of a sole participant in basketball, or did you watch a lot of NBL or NBA, or were you kind of active in the sport, or sort of a viewer of the sport, or both?
I guess I was, just a participant, you know, like a lot of the other Aussie kids growing up. You grow up in your backyard, you might have half a hoop on half a backboard, and you just throw whatever round thing you can at it.
Sure.
Until your parents will kind of think, oh yeah, that's cool, and then you grow and just slowly upgrade the hoop, and you get an actual basketball, then you go from there. You know, we just had a little dirt patch out the side of the house, and I just shoot on that. Luckily enough, Cairns basketball was around the corner from where I lived, so and they had a bunch of outdoor courts, and I just walked down whenever I could and shoot.
Great.
If not, I just shoot in the backyard, but it wasn't really on TV or
watching much. You weren't someone who sort of saw a game on TV and thought, oh, I'll play the game. It was more like you grassroots sort of stuff.
Yeah, we didn't really have that kind of luxury, I guess, growing up, having pay TV, which was probably the only way you could watch NBA back then.
Or NBL.
Yeah, for that sake. So it wasn't really a common thing. Kent didn't have an NBL team at the time.
Right.
We just had a State League team, which was an absolute powerhouse on the State League circuit. So Cairns Marlins over the 90s. They got a bunch of national championships and things like that. So that was the main event. You know, you wanted to go down there. You wanted to be the next Timmy Duggan, the next George Butler, those kind of guys. Aaron Fern was playing at the time when I was a kid as well. There was a bunch of guys as I was growing up that were really, really good players. Yeah. And in a different time, they probably would have had successful NBL careers had there been a team there.
Yeah, that's a charming way to do it. Photography. How did you get into photography? Did you sort of, were you a doodler or an artist who gravitated to the digital stuff, or did you just fall straight into it?
I guess I was neither. I was my first season in Europe. I just landed a job in Portugal off a trial. Mm-hmm. I was so stoked, got my first paycheck, and I made a promise to myself that I was going to quit video games. I was going to put my time into something.
What did you play? What video games had you?
I played FIFA.
Okay.
Just hard. I never played any of the basketball games. I used to play NBA Live for a little bit.
Yep.
But I kind of stopped doing that once my basketball took off. Once I was playing too much basketball in real life, the last thing I wanted to do in my own time was
play a
digital version of that. So
FIFA.
I was in Portugal, got my first paycheck, and I was like, yep, I'm getting the camera. And then I
switching hobbies from video games to camera, radio. And did you get
I knew nothing about it.
Oh, you knew nothing about it? Did you look at, like, did you go to the library and get out books or YouTube or bump into someone? How did you sort of mature with it?
Just YouTube tutorials and just the old-fashioned way, just sitting out, trying to take photos, not being happy with it, trying to understand. I think the most important thing was understanding what I wanted it to look and how it actually looked, and then trying to bridge the gap, whether that was trying different techniques or getting on YouTube more, asking friends who had cameras and things like that. Then kind of by the end of that season, I could take a photo on fully manual settings in kind of under any scenario.
Right, with your focusing and stuff, I understand.
Yeah.
And then,
but it was still a hobby, you know. It was just something to keep me sane in those European winters because it's so cold.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And if you're from Cairns, you just sit cooped up in your little apartment and you just get cabin fever. So you just got to layer up, toughen up, and go get outside or else it's just too long of a season.
And was videography, were you kind of doing photography and learning videography at the same time, or did one come after the other?
Definitely videography was second.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I'd shoot photos, I'd just shoot photos, and then that was it. It wasn't until I probably got my first iPhone and my first GoPro that I started trying to make some little clips here and there, and it was just more something to document the activities we do. So when I got back to Cairns, it was kind of the first time I started even using video mode on a phone.
Right.
I was just making videos for our friends, really.
Bit of friends and stuff, yeah.
For us to post on Facebook and show that we weren't just playing basketball and that was it.
Sure. And did I'm looking back at it now for you, are you quite happy that you did that projection from still photographs to video, you know, learning the sort of real basics of a photo composition and then going into video, or you really don't see any problem either way?
I think it would help. When you're taking photo, it's a one moment kind of thing. Video, you can kind of pick out your few seconds, but once you miss that photo moment, it's gone. So understanding that, the importance of light, shutter speed, ISO, all the technical aspects, mm-hmm. was a lot easier learned in the photo form, I felt.
Right.
And then bringing it to video wasn't easier, but I felt like I already knew a lot going in.
On your website, you talk about it's really important for you to maintain mobility, being able to move around, take nature shots, things like that. How does your equipment reflect that? What equipment do you have, and how do you kind of use it, or any sort of secrets or tips of the trade of keeping mobile but still having the proper stuff?
I think for me, and everyone's going to be extremely different in this, everything that I need to make like a full documentary, I can fit in the backpack.
Yeah, right.
And while that might not be as high grade or technically, I don't know, specific as someone else, for me it works, and I think that's what's the most important about every creative. You define who you are as a creative, what you do well,
right,
and what you enjoy, not just, oh, I need this camera because such and such has this camera, right. And then I have like just a Sony mirrorless, some prime lenses, a monitor, a little gimbal, and a DJI Mavic Air, just like a hand-sized drone. And you can make
a little hand-sized drone.
If you know how to.
That's really neat.
It's pretty much the size of my palm and fingers when it's all.
Oh, that's awesome.
Put together.
Yeah, no, I used to have one of the bigger ones and fly that around, but it was too cumbersome. I like the idea of small one. That's actually kind of neat. What about software?
It's brilliant. It shoots in 4K, and then in that same backpack, I can put my MacBook Pro and my external hard drives, which I edit off.
Right.
And you can do a lot of things with that.
And the software, do you like Adobe or are you Final Cut or is there a photography or videography one I'm not aware of?
I mean, there's a lot out there for photography. I love Lightroom. Created a bunch of my own presets for all things. I mean, from sport through to underwater, through to hiking, nature, travel, all sorts of things for shooting portraits of people. And then for video, it's Final Cut.
And
same thing, I've kind of created my own LUTs and things like that where I can have my own colors and things just how I like them, which, again, there's no right and wrong in the creative space, and that's what's so good about it. I could have, in my opinion, some of the best underwater presets you can have, but someone else, they might not be for their taste at all.
Right.
And a lot of photographers do sell their presets and things like that online, but I don't think that's the route I'd want to take.
Right, sure. On your website, under the About section, it says, Matthew likes to keep his work natural without over-editing or manipulation, focusing on telling the story how it is. My first question there is, how do you personally like identify the story in an event? Like, what are you looking for? How do you watch a game and things like that, or whatever the subject may be?
To me, the story is, if you're sitting back and watching it in the crowd, what did you see? Or what did you want to see? And from behind the scenes, it's what actually happened. Where was the hero moment that really hit home for someone? Or where was the player interaction that, I don't know, sets a story for the day? What's actually happening as opposed to what you think is happening? And that's the hardest thing, what you think and what everyone thinks is happening compared to what's really happening. So, for example, I guess the story when Aaron Brooks went down, it was, all right, how are we actually finding a replacement?
Right.
Like that's the real story. How are they going about this instead of
who third, they should get?
Third-party speculation, players hearing about this, that. Like, let's make our own speculation. Let's put our own research out there. Let's tell the truth about what we're doing. Let's be transparent. Let's write our own story instead of letting someone else write it for us.
Yeah. Now, that was a brilliant episode. Then my next question is, once you've isolated that story or that sort of thread of what you're going to say, what's your process in figuring out how to tell it? Like, do you sit in silence? Do you talk it out with someone? Do you doodle or draw? How do you kind of take that idea and then say to yourself, how am I going to represent it visually?
I think I just see it when it happens. I'll watch it in real time. Now I'm thinking in my head, I guess it's making mental notes. Right. It's straight away, it's like, all right, this is what I'm doing. These are the shots that I need now. These are the shots I already have. This is how it's going to look. I might need audio from such and such to give it a bit more depth. I might need to change this. Or right. I might need to shoot some crowds. It's a nice environment in there tonight. I might need to show that kind of thing. You just really need to go through of what you have and then just layer it down from there. Like you were saying earlier about the highlights, it's like, yeah, you have the product on the court, but everyone can see that. So whatever's on the broadcast, it's common knowledge. People who have seen that, what's the story? What makes it deeper? Was there a crazy costume in the crowd?
Yeah.
Was there a punter behind the bench going crazy? What was the coach's mood like?
Right.
Things like that, that really sets a different tone. And then just it's putting them together, and each person has their own method, I'm sure. Mine's driven around time and efficiency. I don't have time to kind of get home from a game, sit down in my room with a whiteboard,
right,
and just kind of write it all out perfectly. I just got to think about it on the fly because we're trying to post them the next day.
Wow. And you're working
the next day.
Are you in a team or by yourself? Or
just by myself.
Wow. So I'm assuming you've got your intro like made. You've got with the drone shots and the beach shots and that. That's all done. But then that's sort of probably between 4 and 6 minutes of content. Would that be about right? And you're shooting.
Yeah, really. It really varies.
Yeah.
Again, depends on the story. It might be a long night like it was out in New Zealand. We might only have 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But then you might get something where a lot happens in the week and then it's 5 or longer. For example, the War Room episode was, the original take was 11, and then we kind of chopped it down.
Right.
Right. So it really depends, and that can change day to day. But yeah, it's just me. I send them to Ben Graham. He runs socials, and he will pretty much say if it's good to go, and then it just gets posted. It's pretty
natural.
Simple. Like I said, everything's in my backpack.
Yeah,
and that's all we need.
Yeah, no, neat. What was I going to say? How much of like when you're shooting and filming, how much of your delivery structure, like whether you're putting out on YouTube or Twitter or a time, not so much a time limit, but there is some thought to time being social. Does that inform a lot of your thinking as you're filming or not so much?
Actually, not at all.
Not at all.
When we sat down, Ben and I, like, it's called the Foundation Series, right? Because it's for the diehards of the club, the people who have been there since the start, people who understand it. Of course we have LaMelo Ball, so we naturally have a lot more eyeballs.
Yeah.
But this isn't the content for that. That's why we did smaller clips like Mello mic'd up, other smaller pieces here and there. But this is just whatever's happening, we're just telling it how it rolls to the best of our ability.
Right.
If that's 3 minutes or if that's 5 minutes,
you just go with it.
We're just rolling with that time aside. I think if it runs 15 minutes and it's epic, then cool. It'll be 15 minutes. If it's 2 minutes and it's epic, same thing.
Yeah. My next question is, how do you straddle the line between getting the footage and the shots you want, privacy, respect, unintrusiveness, friendships, and your style? How do you, because that must be when you're working at such a frantic pace, that's a lot to juggle. How do you go about it?
I think that's probably the hardest thing to do, especially for someone if you come into the space without playing any basketball or you're not familiar with sport. It would be extremely difficult, but knowing what a professional environment's like playing-wise, you kind of have an understanding of people's boundaries. So you get used to players' routines, you get used to who likes to talk and who doesn't like to talk before the game, who's kind of just in their zone, so you leave them alone, where to sit, things like that. It's just come from a real good understanding of the game.
Yeah.
And that's where I base most things. And if I know the people, that's obviously going to help more. And at the end of the day, my job is to make those guys look better.
Sure.
So it's not, I'm never throwing anyone under the bus. I'm just trying to tell the story. And when people understand that, it makes it a lot easier as well, because you're all on the same team at the end of the day.
Exactly. And it's working. The rights and privileges of a photographer. So when you're there, or a filmer, when you're there on the game day, are you wearing a high-vis vest and you've got carte blanche to kind of walk anywhere you want? Do you go into huddles? What's your sort of game day process?
It really varies. So in the NBL, you kind of have your little allocated areas, which change from arena to arena, and you have the little blue photographer bib on. At home games, I'm allowed to roam a little bit more just because we have those relationships, as you'd expect, being the home team. Huddles during the game, again, that's kind of what I put in the broadcast basket. People can kind of see that and what's going on.
Yeah, right. You've already got that footage.
The main part of the story is not what happens kind of between the white lines. That's what everyone can see. Of course, trying to get some really pretty cinematic shots of it and make sure it looks nice, but it's not the end all of it. So we're trying to get the pregame stuff when there's no one in the gym, the coach's last message before they run out, halftime, post-game. And then depending on how the night folds out, we'll use bits and pieces to best tell that story.
Sure. Aspiring sports photographers and videographers out there are going to know this one. How do you personally go about acquiring a client? Let's say the Foundation Club, right? How did the whole thing with Slam and the Foundation Club, how did that rise up? Did you come up with the idea originally? Did they approach you, them? How did that work? Or is it private?
I guess it's like, this is, no, not at all. I'm just trying to think where's the best starting point. So last year, I'm not sure if you saw the Illawarra Indigenous kits wore for the Indigenous game.
Mm-hmm.
So that game, I was actually in Sydney by coincidence, and I was just, we were living there, my partner and I, and Patty and Tyson texted me the night before the game, and they said, hey, we have an Indigenous game tomorrow, the whole Savage jerseys, this is how they look.
That was awesome, by the way.
Dale was coming down. Yeah, they were unbelievable. Dale was coming down on the didgeridoo. They had an incredible evening set up to showcase culture, First Nations peoples. It was, I mean, that's how I first started out, was in that space. And of course, I was interested, and we made it happen that night before. We had a rough plan of what we're going to do. And then we went and did it. Tyson got me access with the Hawks. And then I went down and shot a 2-minute video, and we gave it to Patty that night, and he posted it on his channels the next morning.
And that would have made it pretty popular.
And it created a whole round.
Yeah. And it's created what is now, coming in. And then everyone sort of followed suit, yeah.
And now this year there should be a whole round, and hopefully we'll get Patty on board again with the Hawks, as him and Tyson are close friends, obviously, and Patty and I too, and Tyson and I too. So that's just how it started, really. And I had that good rapport, and then I went to London earlier this year, and I was shooting for a team over there doing pretty much the same thing.
I'm not sure
if you saw any of those.
No, I haven't seen that.
So that was kind of where the episodic stuff started. A good mate of mine, Marco, he started off the series, and I was coming as he was leaving, and he just called me up and said, "Hey, man, like, this is what we have. Do you want to take it over?" And while he was away, and of course, I was definitely interested in shooting basketball, although at the time, I guess I first started out saying I didn't want to shoot basketball. I wanted to shoot everything but, because I played so much.
And right, right.
I couldn't seem to get away from it, so yeah, I shot the stuff in the BBL, and I still had a slight relationship with the Hawks from the stuff with Patty in the Indigenous round, and yeah, one thing led to another, and there was an opportunity in the Illawarra once LaMelo Ball signed.
Right, and that's where Slam came into the conversation, right?
Slam come in a little bit later, so what we had planned was already going ahead before Slam came on board.
Right.
So we were like, I was here before we had agreed to come in before the Slam guys came on board, but of course they saw what we were doing and wanted to be a part of it. You can't really blame them. It's great exposure. It's, in my opinion, up there with Southeast Melbourne's with the best episodic stuff in the league at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
So, of course, Slam would want to be on board, and yeah, we're happy to have them. They've been a huge help for us, of course, with exposure and things like that.
And they're quite free. They let you sort of tell your own story, though, don't they? By the sound of it, they do.
Yeah. So, yeah, our concepts were kind of in place. Theirs was more from a, not a creative point of view, but just a...
distribution?
Exposure and branding for their stuff as well. They wanted to get some added exposure, and this was our best digital asset to give them.
Right. And with the Foundation Club, when you sort of started out, did you have a sort of written proposal you had done, or were you mainly working off what you'd done in the BBL, kind of showing that footage and saying, "Hey, here's what we'd like to do with Illawarra"? Or did you, or are you quite a litigious person who had the sort of, you know, the plot? Here's the log line.
It was both.
Bit of both. Okay.
It was both. So it was definitely before the BBL. I did some stuff with the Australian Indigenous team.
Mm-hmm.
Joel Carter, he kind of gave me my first opportunity with Papua New Guinea, and then we moved into the Australian Indigenous basketball, and it was similar stuff. It was storytelling pieces based around the games.
Mm-hmm.
And then London was next level episodic, as we're covering each game. Right. And then it was that concept. It was, hey, let's do this. I don't know if we can. There might be a bit of red tape from the NBL, but they've been brilliant with access and helping us do that as well. And then, yeah, we proposed that, we wrote it all out. This is what it looks like. This is roughly the hours. This is what we want to show. Here's an example of winning. Mm-hmm. Here's an example from losing. Here's an example that has a little bit of everything. And then we just went from there. We just grew out the concept.
Brilliant.
And then once, I guess, LaMelo jumped on board, it was...
ships ahoy. Like, go for it.
Yeah. And there was definitely interest from other NBL clubs as well. But the fit at the time was just good with Illawarra as a... in terms of had the most creative control to to tell the story that I wanted to tell, and they were very, very open with me. Great communication from those guys, and having that relationship from the year before really helped as well. I knew what I was going into. I knew it could make some really, really good things.
Yeah. I was about to say, I mean, because I, you know, a game finishes and sometimes you read these game logs, and not to discredit the work anyone does on those, they're a nice little tool, but the idea that this, you've got almost a video game log is what you're creating, that's a little bit more theatrical. With the way media is consumed now, it just feels like the organic, it feels like the natural step, you know what I mean? It's great. And this, I mean, I can only imagine next season you'll have maybe half or maybe the whole league doing these, and then soon enough, you know, it's just a natural progression of things. So you've done well to sort of get in at ground one, and the Foundation Club's great, and it's gone pretty popular and doing well.
That's what's crazy about it. Like, it has gone well, but it also, it is still wind dependent.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing something really groundbreaking, like the player proposals and signings, looking at that, the War Room episode, as you call it, then it is very wind dependent. A lot of people, if you're a diehard fan, you don't want to watch your team lose again the next day.
How do you straddle that balance, Matt? How do you straddle that? Like, how do you tell the story, remain positive? It's a tough ask with this Hawks team at the minute.
It's not always about remaining positive. It's being genuine in your storytelling. It's it's not masking the fact that we're 1-6 going into a game 1-7 now, going into a game 1-8. It's showing the grind. It's showing that, hey, these guys care about their job. Things aren't going their way, but they're going through it. You can see them. You can see there was one episode, and I had it was a tough shot to shoot. It was Timmy Conrad missing the shot. I think it was against Perth at the end.
Yeah, back the close game.
And it just shows him, hands on his head, sweat coming off, fade to black logo. Like, that's, if you're Tim Conrad, that's hard to watch.
Yeah, brutal. Yeah,
definitely. And that's what I want to show the people, is that these guys are really going through it with Illawarra on their chest. They're not trying to do anything besides win games. But then on the contrary, if we win, it's going to be basically a highlights montage of the guys getting a good vibe, jumping around, so on and so forth. I'm just trying to tell it as is. There's no point masking and telling lies.
Manipulating it, sure.
For sure. This is for the fans. They want to see something more authentic than what they can see on the hour and a half, hour 45 broadcast.
Yeah, makes sense. Let's go. Just a couple of questions about that War Room episode. How did you get in that room? I know you said the decision was made to kind of do it. Was there ever a trepidation where you're kind of standing there with your camera like, oh, am I allowed to come into this room? Is this all right? Like, how was that conversation?
It actually happened the same day that we shot it.
Right.
We were at training that morning. Ben Graham and I were sitting there, we were chatting, and we were like, yeah, man, let's try to do this. And Matt Campbell conveniently was just walking right past us along the sideline. Like, hey, mate, you have a minute? And then we talked through, and we said he was open to the idea, which is all you can ask. And we said we'd, of course, show you whatever we make. Matt Flynn's been unbelievable to work with. I asked him. He said, not an issue. Let's just see how it looks, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah.
And they had a session, one of many sessions, looking at players, as you can imagine, an hour after practice, so there's no time like the present, so we just rolled with it.
Good man.
We just had those conversations that we're trying to make the club look as good as we can and paint them in the best light possible, and that's what we're trying to do at the end of the day. We also made it pretty clear that, hey, this would be a first in the NBL. Everyone's going to watch it. And Ben was sending me stuff of people photoshopping Mario Chalmers in a Hawks jersey.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. You got journalists on Twitter, some of the big ones in Australia, like Olgan. He paused the video, wrote down every single name on the board. This is who they're looking at. To me, that's the point of what we're doing. This is what we're looking at. This is no joke. This isn't someone just blurting out random names and putting sources told them. This is from the source.
Yeah, you're controlling own destiny,
absolutely. And I'm surprised more teams don't do that, if that's how you feel. At the end of the day, a lot of these guys that teams are looking at have been seen, if not this season, the season before, or someone on the coaching staff has seen it at such a professional and highly ranked league that there's not really many surprise packages coming out here. And if someone does come out, they're scouted within a few hours anyway.
Yeah.
So if we put out, I don't know how many names are on the board.
20.
And we say we like a few of them.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of good players that you're going to say you like. So that's how it is. And the coaching staff will just, I guess, keep sitting in that room until they
come on.
Get one that they're scouted.
There's no import sign just yet, but maybe that'll change in the future. I mean, I think what Foundation Club has done a lot of things, but what I like about it as well is hopefully it shows clubs that transparency isn't weakness. It's actually, you can see it for you guys, it's a strength. That, who are the Hawks going to sign in the place of Brooks? Rumour, innuendo, da-da-da, whatever. Just control your destiny. Here's who we're looking at, here's who we're not, here's what we like, here's what we don't. It just made that conversation a talking point, made that conversation fun, interesting, original. It's really good. In that episode, I want to talk to you about your sight lines. So there's a time when Matt Flynn's actually answering questions. I'm presuming you've asked them because he's looking at camera or close to camera.
Yeah.
When you're in that situation how are you holding your camera kind of at your waist to maintain eye contact, or how do you physically shoot that scene?
I think I was sitting at a chair and the table was around waist height, so it wasn't ideal. I think I was holding it slightly above the table, just off to the right.
So right,
we could chat, but it's just it's knowing the person and having a good relationship with them and them trusting you to do your job, I guess. It's simple as the same way he trusts his players to do a job on the court, he trusts me to do a job in the digital space, and that's just, I'm just asking him questions that I'd ask out of curiosity of myself and also out of, well, what's the story here?
Right.
Like, what's going through your mind? How are we replacing AB?
Right.
Do we need a two? Do we need a four? Like, what are you thinking?
Mm.
And it's just, and then just letting them talk. They might want to say what they need. They might not. But once you have that trust and respect of the person, it makes it a lot easier to have those conversations. And that's the same thing. It doesn't, to me, that's not a high pressure situation. That's just another day with Matt Flynn chatting.
Do you ever get nervous?
Same as, was he a bit nervous or was I?
Do you ever get nervous going into situations where you're like, oh, I want this shot and someone's in the way, or I want to talk to that person but I know now's not the right time, and if I don't take the opportunity, it's going to go? Do you ever get like that?
No, not at all, because I'm confident with my knowledge about basketball. Like, I've done basketball my whole life. I just kind of sit in those situations, although I did a video with the Queensland Maroons last year.
Mm-hmm.
I know next to nothing about rugby league. The only rugby league I watch is those three games a year. And that was a completely different scenario where I have to ask a lot of questions to other people to find out, hey, who's the head coach? You know, who are the main guys who aren't stars but they're still important players? What's I'm looking at football highlights to try and understand it. Like, it's still not stressful, it's learning, but for basketball, I guess it's a comfort zone, so to speak. So for other clubs to do something similar, and I hope they do, you need to really take into account the value of having someone who genuinely knows the game and, most importantly, knows people. Because you can't just come in there guns blazing. You've got to be a fly on the wall, so to speak.
It'd be tough for a film guy who's kind of coming in like, just hang on, Matt, can you just shift to the left a little bit and that chin down, down a bit? Actually, that line didn't come through. Can I get you to repeat? You know, like, bless their heart, but it just wouldn't work. You got to have an understanding. Because the reason why I asked
and that's
is,
how it is.
Oh, yeah. You were sorry, Matt. Go on.
Yeah, like, that's how it is. People come in from that background and you can't do that. These are all stars at their position, at their job, at their coaching spot.
And not
at
actors.
Their management position. They're not talent. They sit way above you in the pecking order on the food chain of importance. So their goal is not to tell my story. That's my goal. So whatever I do or don't get, it's kind of up to me. So that's a hard thing. You wouldn't want to be, oh, we're not playing good because there's too much other theatrics and things like that going on.
Mm. My other question is, are you going to do like a year in review video, maybe take the stuff that didn't make each episode of the Foundation Club and put it together in sort of a half hour, 45 minute? Is there any talk about doing something like that, or like the idea?
We might. There's going to be a lot of shots.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of shots left over. In saying that, for 1 to 2 quarters a game, I still try and shoot still photos as well.
Really?
So there's not as much as you'd think from shooting a whole game, because I'm trying to shoot still photos and I guess keep growing this digital footprint where the Illawarra Hawks, it's no kind of secret that us Cairns, we're working on a smaller budget, so we need more dudes to wear more hats.
Yeah, right.
And that's also digitally. We have at home games, we have another photographer who shoots for us and myself, but on the road, it's just what we have and what the NBL supplies at Getty. But if you want to have a different feel to your digital strategy, to your content, you kind of need your own shots that have your own colors and fit your own vibe. So that's what we're trying to do. So a lot of the time it's focusing on still doing that as well.
Mm-hmm. With your editing, do you basically shoot a game and go straight into it? Do you have an editing process that you kind of do? Like, do you have multiple projects or lines? Like, what's your nuts and bolts editing suite? What does that look like?
I guess I'd bring it all home and I'd have a rough idea of what shots in my head. So if I shoot something really, really good, I'm going to know straight away. So when we lost the Heartbreaker to Perth at home, I was straight away, all right, I'm going to finish on that shot off to
Tim Conrad.
He's going to hate me to see it, but this is the best, the most powerful shot I have, and it's going to tell the story. So it's kind of remembering what you have right away, so you're not just spending time burning through every single vibe when a lot of it you can just throw away. And just, the longest bit is finding a song.
Really? How do you go about that? Like, do you use free, like, Commons music, or do you have a guy who's doing it?
I used to have a guy, and now I'm on a subscription service called Artlist, and it's kind
brutal.
Of like a Netflix style. You just pay money, and then you can go on there and
type in, highlight reel excited or something like that, and it comes up with options. That can be brutal.
Yeah. So you're just sitting there, and that's kind of needle and haystack stuff.
Oh.
You're just hoping you find something that matches what you have. And
do you do that after? Do you kind of get your footage and put it to music? Or you put the footage to music? You have the music first?
It varies. Usually I'll try and get a little bit of it down, a little bit of just the footage by itself to see how it looks, have a little skeleton, and then kind of adjust it and time it to music. But you can't really find the music until the game's done because you don't know. You might have a sad song and you win by 20.
Right.
And that's not going to work. So the music's almost last, which is kind of draining if you're just sitting around late at night and you really want to post the next morning and you're like, all right.
God finds it.
Just wasting a lot of time.
You just flip into those databases. That's brutal. Last question, Matt. What's your dream project? Like, are you hoping to go into feature films? Are you hoping to go into sports documentary, on camera? What's your thing?
That's tough. I mean, if someone asked me this a year ago, I would have said shooting the boomers.
Shooting the boomers. And you've done that.
You know what I mean? That's the pinnacle of Australian basketball.
Yeah.
That's the team that wins the green and gold, that has the best players that we have. And a year ago when I was trying to get that project off the ground, I was like, wow, this would be revolutionary for people to see a little bit of what goes on behind the scenes here.
Yeah.
And like anything, it all starts with probably not going to happen to put something together. And then you kind of, over the space of 12 months, that came about. But moving forward, I think it's definitely doing more in that space at that level. That's trying to help someone else get a Opal's page off the ground so they can have something similar. It's trying to just improve digital content, digital strategy for basketball in Australia. Hopefully next season all NBL clubs will look at what we did and be like, hey, we should do that. Mm-hmm. And they'll go bring in someone to do that, and then it's just good. It'll help grow the sport organically coming from the source. It's not so much a personal goal, but it's just leaving a positive mark on the space. I don't know if I want to work for an NBA team because that's kind of the only next step up.
It would, yeah.
To me, like, yeah, you can go to EuroLeague, but an NBA team or the NBA, maybe there's too much red tape to really create what I want to create.
Maybe schedule too. You'd be working pretty hard, Matt. From 28 games to 82, holy moly.
Maybe that's not what I wanted to do. Maybe it is. I'm not sure. I haven't shot a day for the NBA. Maybe it's
great.
The dream, but it's really just cementing the present. It's doing some of the coolest stuff people have seen from the boomers.
Yeah.
It's because that's an untapped space. It's all right, let's do some stories here. Let's show what goes on when these guys put on the green and gold.
Because no one's, even Team USA haven't really done it. There was a Dream Team documentary about 92 that had some training footage that was very good. But obviously the boomers is just, I mean, you're lucky to get a few still photographs and some of the stuff you've shot, which I've seen. But just quickly, so you went with the team to China?
Yeah, I was with them from the first day of training camp to the heartbreaker against France for the bronze.
Oof. Tell me about the travel. So, like, would that have been, because obviously there's a big talk about, I'll stop there, Matt, but remember we were saying you wanted to submit questions about
Boomers.
The questions I had about the Boomers, mainly about the travel. Like, a lot of guys, you saw with the team, you know, fatigued towards the end or got tired. That was a lot of what the reporters had said. Tell me about the travel, like, moving around China. Like, was that difficult or not difficult?
It's what you'd expect going around China. I think unless you have a private jet like the USA's or someone, it's going to be tough. It's going to be domestic airports or trains or buses or however.
It was all those things, available. Trains, buses, trains, planes, automobiles? It was all of them?
It was definitely automobiles and planes. We didn't catch a train, although we looked at the possibilities of it. But this is the same for every country, right? Each country has to get to the next venue.
Yeah, I know.
We did hear some countries got a little bit more fortunate in the fact that they got to stay put in one place for a long time, but each one of our games, each pool or each round was somewhere completely different. So we were very active, and I wouldn't say that that's what kind of was the reason for losing at all, but I mean, people have to report on something.
Good point. Because I just thought, I've never travelled through China, never been to China, unfortunately, but yeah. I can just imagine, I was like, oh, hang on. I remember looking at the map, and I was like, they're going from here to here in like a couple of days, maybe two or three. I was like, that's, you know, it's not
a
huge...
It's a brutal schedule. It's a brutal schedule for sure. You got a game, one day off, a game. And if your one day off is burnt in transit, that's pretty tough. Yeah. Like, that's tough if you wake up at 7, 8 a.m. for a 10 a.m. flight. You get to the airport, get to the next accommodation, it's late afternoon, you play the next day. Like, that's tough, but
that's the league.
That's the World Cup. And to the boys' credit, they got through it. They were just pushing, you know, they were focused on their goal of winning a medal for the country, and that was always the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. And they'll reel it back four years from now and do it again. Try to. Do it even sooner in Japan.
Hopefully come out in Tokyo.
Fingers crossed.
Get a gold medal. That would be unbelievable.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, it was that experience was just unreal. Just being in the facility shooting. A lot of my close friends play on the team. That was just cool to see them go about their business. And again, I didn't really feel any pressure or anxiety or nervous energy. It was just, all right, we've been planning this thing. I got the easiest job. I just got to tell the story.
Right.
And all the content that come out of that was mostly one-of-one shots. It was no one else is in the building. So,
good man. I saw some of it. And thought it was pretty good.
Different.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, thank you.
Matt, that's all I've really got for you, but really appreciate it. I think people are going to enjoy, because I do this for a lot of kids who are coming through, learning about, even myself, you know, videography and reporting and storytelling in sports, and I think it's really neat, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, hopefully they can pick up something. It's a very small niche, I guess, basketball storytelling, but it's still, at the end of the day, it's just storytelling, right? It can be applied to anything, any sport, any way of life.
Thanks very much for listening. That's the end of the interview. I hope you enjoyed. As always, like and subscribe to the podcast. Traditionally, I do round-by-round reviews and previews of the NBL, but every now and again, I like to do these things where I interview someone in the NBL media or in the sort of basketball journalism media space. We have a chat about things. Thanks very much.